He will tell you the version of the past he believes that you need, but no, he won't tell you everything. I'm not sure that he's capable. Karen could feel her skin tightening.
He has to. I came to Berlin once before and ended up with more confusion. I can't go away from here again without the answers I want.
You may have to. My father is stubborn. He sets his mind and it stays there.
Marcus shook his head as Karen began to argue.
It's what I said yesterday. You have to try and understand him, or you won't get anywhere with him at all.
Then, explain him better to me. There was a pause, and then Marcus nodded.
Okay, I'll do what I can. Let's say, then, that you met him in a different way, and tried to talk, like everyone is doing, about Berlin's reunification. He wouldn't engage in a discussion. He would walk away, or he would deliver the same lecture on the miseries of capitalism he's been quoting for years. He won't go to the West, even though he's past pensionable age and no one would bother. He still won't call the barrier between the sectors the wall. Every time he hears it called that, he corrects the name back to the anti-fascist protection rampart like a DDR robot. When I was a child, he would make me turn my back on it and pretend there was nothing beyond the concrete but more East Germany. It was ridiculous. But he was unshakable.
Karen laughed at the image of the West-defying little boy. She couldn't help herself, and relaxed even further when Marcus joined in.
Exactly. Stubborn to the point of madness. He lives his life inside strict boundaries and strict beliefs. He always has. Your needs won't push him outside those.
Marcus drove into Karl Marx Alley's wider road and stopped the car outside Michael's apartment, his voice and face all seriousness again.
I'm sorry, Karen, but I would be lying if I promised you a different man.
What if whatever he tells me isn't enough? Karen hovered on the pavement, her energy for this next bout already draining. What if none of it is ever enough? Marcus could have offered platitudes. Karen knew other men would. Instead, he simply took her hand as he pressed the buzzer. There was an unexpected comfort in his silence.
Chapter 13. Lisa. Berlin, September 1943 to May 1945.
The guard wiped her hands and walked away as everyone screamed, except Lisa. She couldn't move. She couldn't cry. She couldn't believe her heart hadn't immediately stopped. She stood in the middle of the screams and the shouts and waited for the end that had to be coming.
Lisa Elfman, is that really you?
The voice cut through the clamour, as clear and crisp and as full of delight as if its owner was hailing her across a dance floor.
Come here!
Everyone fell back. A pathway opened. When she didn't move, a guard dragged her forward.
Gently now, especially with those pretty hands.
The man tapping his foot as he waited for her was tall and blonde and dressed in a black uniform so exquisitely tailored, it looked as if he had stepped from a magazine.
I was right. I knew it. I'd recognize you anywhere, despite that rather strange hair color you're sporting.
But you're frowning. Don't you remember me?
He smiled. It made him look colder.
Fritz Zorin? Commandant Zorin now, to be accurate?
No? No matter.
You were rather dazzled by that French buyer the last time we met, or so I recall. Such extravagant hosts, the Elfmans. Always the finest foods, the most expensive champagne.
He clapped his hands so suddenly, the guard next to him jumped.
And that's why I had my idea. When I saw you there, I could barely believe it was you, to be honest, but the strangest people are turning up here these days. Anyway, this little kingdom you're standing in is all mine, so here's my thought. Why don't I return the favour and extend you some hospitality, in return for all your family showed me? What do you think?
Lisa couldn't make any sense of his manner or his words. She couldn't speak. She couldn't think about anything except the guard, about her vicious little eyes and the brick-sized scarred hand that had blotted out Lottie's precious life. Whatever this Zurin was saying was drowned out by the noises she couldn't shake from her head, the scream that ended almost as soon as it began, and the snap and the splash that had taken her child away. Nothing was as real to her as any of that, so Lisa stared at the bright-eyed commandant in silence and wondered what he wanted with her, and how soon he would stop whatever this nonsense was and kill her.
She's speechless with her good fortune. How charming. Well, I shall take that as a yes. Off you go, my dear. Off you go.
Zurin turned away before Lisa could catch up with him, his attention caught by some other distraction.
Up the hill. Do as the commandant says. Move.
Not knowing what else to do, Lisa stumbled up the slope towards the row of houses looking down onto the lake, another of the female guards panting behind her.
Why is he doing this?
What she really wanted to ask was,
why am I still alive when my daughter is dead?
But the words were beyond her.
How should I know? The commandant thinks he knows you. He thinks you have some value. You should be grateful. He probably just saved your life.
And then the pain finally hit, raw and red and wearing Lottie's face.
Still no news. Still looking.
Commandant Zurin had made the same solemn pronouncement at least twice a month, waiting until Lisa nodded and smiled in the grateful way he preferred. By February 1945, she must have heard it at least 34 times. She had long since stopped believing that the looking was true, but on he went with the lying. Lisa rarely wondered any more why he bothered. Presumably it was all part of the games he loved to play. Or perhaps he still thought she was going to turn her scissors into a weapon and mess up his pretty house. Doing that had been her first thought 17 months ago, when she was marched from the horror that had engulfed her outside the camp gates and up the hill into Zurin's home. He had appeared shortly afterwards and looked her up and down as if she were a prize cow.
Lisa Elfman. What a delight. Finally, I get your undivided attention.
I once asked your father for permission to court you. Did you know that? He laughed. Can you imagine how much that hurt my feelings? He was happy enough for my family to supply textiles to the great House Elfman, apparently. But to provide a husband for its heir, the idea was an outrage. What a lucky escape I had when you think about it. What a horror to have been saddled with a filthy little Jew for a wife. The swings of fortune favoured me in the end, and now look how the tables are turned. Lisa Elfman, my own little seamstress. Oh, we will keep you so busy. Dresses for my wife and her friends, uniforms for me. You'll have a salon's worth of clients again. Isn't that lucky? On and on he went, his too loud voice pouring round her.
Then Lisa saw the dressmaking scissors he was holding, and she snapped back into something like life. She had taken them, cradled them, pressed the steel blades against her skin, and imagined her blood pouring.
I wonder, do you think about your parents?
It had been an odd thing to ask. Did he really think she was wondering about anything except her child, and how much suffering there had been in those last terror-filled seconds? She didn't answer. She eventually grew to understand he rarely cared if she did. Zurin was the show. Lisa was simply part of the audience.
Do a good job, and I could find them for you.
Would having family left alive be a comfort?
The stupidity of the question had stunned her. Or, more accurately, its cruelty. Over the next months, at the close quarters Lisa had suddenly found herself in, she realized that the Nazis' capacity for cruelty went far deeper than anything she could have imagined long ago in Berlin. That it went beyond the more obvious brutality. She knew Zurin had seen what had happened to Lottie, but he never once acknowledged it, or behaved as if her child's murder mattered. She had wondered in her first confused days in the house if Zurin had some sexual motive in plucking her out, if he planned to take what had been refused him before. It wasn't hard to imagine. It quickly became obvious from the maid's white faces and his wife's watchful, narrowed eyes that he treated his female staff like a buffet. It also became quickly obvious, however, that his distaste for her Jewish heritage would always damp down his desire. Lisa was a trophy Zurin had no interest in touching. The commandant and his household saw her so completely as other. It was like living inside the sneering posters and the Jew-hating newspapers they all set such store by. They stepped back when she passed them, placing their hands forward like a shield. They discussed her while she moved among them, as if she spoke a different language or had no language at all, as if she had no more ability to possess finer feelings than the cat who scavenged scraps in the kitchen, who no longer turned her head when her latest litter of kittens was tidied away. Not that it mattered. Not that anything that happened to her mattered.
I'm keeping you alive. You're one of the lucky ones.
Another of Zurin's favorite sayings, riddled with pride at the generosity of her special position, that he presumed she would echo. Part of Lisa knew that she should feel grateful, that every woman thrown into the camp, facing the brutality of those guards every day, would change places with her in a heartbeat. Knowing that, and knowing that she cared nothing for her own life, only filled her with more guilt. His ploy had worked. The promise of finding her deported parents had added to the unreality of everything that was happening, and kept the scissors off her wrists for those first sleepwalking few days. Then Lisa looked up, and saw the lake gleaming below the house where Zurin had put her, and realized why she was still living. Lottie was down there. Lottie was waiting. It was as if a blindfold had been ripped away. Lottie was waiting. One day, when all this was over, Lisa would go down to the lake and join her child. She would walk out into the water. She would lie down. She would wrap her arms around her baby and never again let her go. Until then, it was a mother's job to keep vigil. Every night, after that revelation, Lisa sat at the window of the tiny attic she was locked up in and kept watch from behind its green shutters. Whether the water was still or smooth, rain-filled or iced over, Lisa sang Lottie's favorite songs and told her favorite stories out into the dark, holding tight to the thread that still bound them. And once she knew her purpose, staying useful started to matter. Lisa could see the heavy fortifications round the camp, and the bright lights that illuminated it as clear as she could see the lake shore. As the months passed, she could also see the smoke that rose in thin plumes from behind the long rows of barracks. She could smell the burned tang that even a downpour couldn't rinse from the air, that the rumors whispering through the house had turned into something too monstrous to believe. Being useless at the task Zurin wanted her for and being sent back into the camp being trapped inside Ravensbrück would not bring the lake and getting back to Lottie any nearer. Lisa stopped existing from day to day and taught herself instead a survival-tuned discipline. She kept up her vigil, but she also forced herself into bed. She learned to accept that the nightmares would come, and she learned that she could survive them for long enough to sleep for a few hours every night, so that her eyes didn't close in the day and ruin the fine embroidery that delighted Frau Zuren. She made herself eat the thin soup and stale black bread left out for her when the rest of the household had eaten, so that her fingers could sew a seam without shaking. Lisa reduced her world to a workroom and a window, to all she needed to get back to Lottie. As the months dragged on, rumors reached the house about the worsening conditions in the camp, whispers about the starvation, the piles of corpses, the breakdown of order, and the guards' increasing cruelty. When 1943 finally ended, it brought no respite. 1944 came in cold and hard and mixed new words into the whispering. Special trucks. Selections. Gassing. The charred animal's stink in the wind grew stronger. Lisa lay in her safe bed and felt her heart shrivel as the guilt gnawed. There were mornings when she pressed the scissors against her skin again and knew how fast it could be over. And then she imagined her daughter, cold and alone, and knew the only way was the water. Lisa stopped listening to anything except her direct orders. She kept her head down during dress fittings and tuned out the chatter. She kept her mouth shut and walked away from gossip. She behaved every day, in the commandant's words, like an exemplary prisoner. There were days when she woke and hated herself for waking. It didn't matter. Because one day this will end. One day I will walk to the lake shore, and I will make all this end. The same promise repeated like a prayer every day as she worked. As she waited. The months passed unchanging, and then April 1945 arrived and brought a morning that started all wrong, that leaped into life far too quickly. Car engines growled outside on the gravel. Inside, the house shuddered as doors slammed and feet pounded through corridors that shouldn't even be wakening. Lisa was scrambling up, still bleary, when the attic door crashed open. Get this uniform on. We have to be dressed and in the kitchen in 5 minutes. Hilga, the other prisoner put to work in the commandant's house, stood in the doorway, a blue and white bundle thrust out in front of her. She was a political who considered herself several steps above a Jew. She never spoke to Lisa, never looked at her if she could help it. Now, Hilga's proud face was pale, and her hands shivered like wind-blown barley. Get a move on. I'm not taking a beating for you. Lisa shook out the striped dress and the jacket with its sewn-on number and two yellow triangles shaped into a star. Their thin fabric was sour with old sweat. The blue and white pattern was mottled with dirt and rust-colored patches. She had been given a black dress when she entered the house and had never worn the camp uniform. The thought of putting it on, of what that implied, cramped up her fingers. What's happening? Hilga drummed her fingers across the doorframe. You really don't know? Haven't you heard the guns? The rumbling disturbing the lake for the last few nights. Was that what it had been? Lisa had presumed it was the sound of a storm coming. She had watched for the rains that would whip up the water. When they hadn't appeared, she had ignored it. I thought it was thunder caught in the mountains. Hilga's shoulders arched. Thunder that goes on for days without breaking. Seriously. I swear I don't know how you do it. Cutting yourself off. Sewing your stupid dresses and jackets like nothing else matters. You know what? I don't care. The war is done, or as good as, and Germany isn't the winner. And now she reacts. There we go. The Russians are almost on top of us. Stop staring at me like a simpleton and get dressed. Hilga's fists clenched. Lisa shucked off her nightdress and pulled on the striped gown. It was so long the hem hit her ankles and generous enough at the waist and the hips to fit a second wearer. She knew her brain was moving too slowly, that Hilga was in no mood for questions, but she was missing something. Surely if the war was ending, prisoners would be freed. Why do we have to dress like this? Frau Zuren won't give these uniforms house room, and anyway, if the fighting is all done, won't they just let us go? Hilga threw Lisa a grubby white square that matched the one tied round her own head. The bitch won't care what we're wearing. She's not here. She's already run with the children, and of course they won't let us go. I'm still a criminal, you're still a Jew. The Nazis still want Germany cleansed of us. All the big houses are emptying. All the prisoners are being sent back to the camp. And I'd rather take my chances there than be shot or, worse, left here alive for the Russians. Come on, get a move on. And cut off your braid. Lisa stopped tying her headscarf. What? Why? Because if you walk into the camp dangling that, the inmates will know that you're new. They could suspect you've been a collaborator and string you up as a Nazi. I don't care if they do, but I don't want anyone looking twice at me for knowing you.
Prisoners! Down the stairs!
Hilga grabbed Lisa's dressmaking scissors and hacked off her plait in one savage cut, pushing Lisa out of the door before she could protest. Two soldiers were poised in the hallway, rifles raised and ready. They rushed Hilga and Lisa out of the house and into a mass of white-faced women already gathered up from the surrounding properties.
Down the hill! March!
Lisa stumbled over the slippery grass, arms out to keep her balance. Spring blossom frosted the trees. The air should have been sweet and apple-scented. It was choked instead with smoke and diesel fumes and tasted charred and oily. Lorries packed the road running alongside the camp. Prisoners pooled round both sides of the gates. Soldiers. Not the black-caped guards of Lisa's nightmares, herded fast-moving groups in and out. Lisa was swept down the hill and through the gates and steered into a packed parade ground. There was no stopping on the sand this time, no chance to slip away to the water. There was no chance to do anything. She was too busy trying not to scream. The women, like her, who had been sent to the SS houses, were thin and pale. But they were beauties compared to what now surrounded them. The square was filled with emaciated women shivering in ragged dresses or, to Lisa's horror, naked, and too lost in misery to try and cover the skin stretched tight as a drum over their bodies. Some had shaved, stubble-covered heads. Others had hair growing back in wild clumps. Everyone was grey. Everyone was old.
Move!
Her group was forced on again. Lisa ran, eyes fixed forward without being told, desperately trying to blank out the stick bodies moving past her like snapped puppets. Bonfires flared. Scraps of burned paper floated through the air like rotten snowflakes. The red flowers were gone. Some of the barracks were half torn down, judging by the stench. Many more were overcrowded. Orders flew, harsh as rocks.
Move! Keep left! Stay together! Stay on your feet or we shoot!
Lisa ran, refusing to think until
Halt!
Brought her column to a tumbling stop.
In there!
One of the soldiers kicked a door open, while the others herded them into a barracks that was dark and ripe.
Is everyone in here dying?
The woman who came in behind Lisa pulled off her headscarf and tied it round her nose and mouth as she spoke.
Everyone in the camp is dying. If you're lucky, you get to do it under your own steam.
The owner of the voice was too thin to claim a discernible age or a gender. Only the filthy dress marked her out as a woman.
Come in. Don't be shy. Press yourself close and choose your poison. TB, cholera, dysentery. We've got the whole set.
She climbed off her bunk and tried for a fairground flourish, but the effort was too much, and her twig arm sank. The newcomers stayed clustered in the doorway.
Suit yourself. Find a bunk, or don't. You'll not likely be here long enough for it to matter at the speed they're running selections.
The prisoner limped towards the disoriented women. Her left leg was badly twisted and wrapped round with scars.
I'm a rabbit.
She waited, clearly expecting a reaction. Her eyes narrowed when she didn't get one.
You don't know what I mean, do you?
Where have you been hiding?
Everyone in Wavensbrook knows about the rabbits. It's the camp's worst-kept secret.
You don't know about the experiments. She came closer, her hands bunching. An animal stink rose from her blotched and peeling skin. There wasn't a trace of fat to separate her bones from their covering. She looked like one too quick movement would split her in two.
Lisa had to fight, not to run.
Of course we know.
Hilga pushed herself to the front of the group, her shoulders squared.
The Nazis use women here for their medical tests. They broke your legs and cut out your bones. Then they stuck the wounds with splinters and bits of glass and injected them full of bacteria. And you hop until you heal.
Or what passes for healing.
So they call you rabbits. There's a difference between knowing and seeing, that's all.
Lisa thought she was going to be sick. The woman didn't move. Neither did she do what Lisa was hoping she would and tell Hilga she was mad or misinformed.
So, you know about the games they play here, or you're clever enough to know the white answer.
That doesn't explain who's been feeding you and where you've come from.
Are you brothel women?
Her voice sharpened. Or those bitches who cook pulled out for house workers like the rest of us were left here to rot.
Lisa froze. Hilga didn't falter.
We've been in the Siemens factory, in the plant outside the camp. They fed us because they needed our fingers nimble.
Perhaps there was more food than here.
Perhaps. You think?
But the woman finally backed off and hobbled away, waving to a corner where the bunks had two inmates crammed in them, not three.
The newcomers edged into the barracks. Lisa tried to duck after Hilga, but was met with a snarl.
Don't come after me. I'll listen to enough gossip to get us past the door in one piece, but you're on your own now.
She disappeared into the forest of bunks, leaving Lisa to pick her way through the groaning. Matchstick arms plucked at her. Pleading eyes followed her.
I don't want to die like this.
She slumped to the ground, knees buckling as the truth hit her.
Of course she wanted to die. That was all she had dreamed of since the day Lottie was taken. But she had imagined a quiet death, the water washing her pain away as she walked towards her child, a death with dignity. And in her offering, a penance. Not this brutal shove into sickness or selection.
Death is death. What does it matter?
Lisa didn't know why, but it did.
Get up.
Lisa started as a foot kicked at her.
Are you deaf? Don't you know anything?
The whistles and the yelling means it's roll call. If they come in and find you capable of walking, but ignoring their orders,
it's a bullet or the ovens.
Lisa stared at the furious woman still prodding at her and wondered why she cared. The woman's heavily accented German switched to a growl.
Not just for you, you stupid bitch. For all of us.
Buses have been spotted not far from the gates. White ones, not the green ones they use for gassing. Some countries have finally whipped up the courage to get their people out.
I'm not missing the chance of that, because you're lost in some dream world.
She hauled Lisa up, dragged her out of the barracks and back round to the now even busier parade ground. Lisa already knew enough not to ask why they hadn't done this first, why the guards had put the women into the barracks only to pull them straight out again. She sensed this was normal, or what passed in the camp for normal. Another way of creating fear and confusion, of stripping away the inmates' humanity, reducing them to creatures without thought, capable only of reaction.
Are they still killing people, even with the enemy so close?
The prisoner, still holding roughly onto her arm, snorted.
Are you serious?
That's why they're still killing us. Lisa stared round her and realized all the bodies packing the square were adults.
The children, too.
What children? What are you talking about? They're all gone. Shipped out to other camps if they made it past birth, or survived the cold, or the hunger. Why would you think there were children?
The parade ground was shouted to order before Lisa could land on an answer. Numbers began flying through the air, thick as the burning paper. Women were pulled into this line and that, some of them forced out of their clothing, some of them not. Lisa barely noticed. She had never imagined there could have been a worse fate for Lottie. Now she could picture too many.
That's you! That's the number on your jacket! Move! Unless you want the whole line to get shot!
Another snarling voice, more tuned to the camp's ways, shoved Lisa forward into a smaller group, carved out from the rest. No one looked anywhere but forward. Lisa waited for the order to strip, which surely meant death. The public humiliation which gave gassing and selection meaning and explained the thin plumes of smoke. It didn't come.
Move!
More running, more shouting, more stops and starts. Two women were deposited outside a block with a medical sign, three at another with a pile of wizened turnips outside. And then there was no one but her, standing outside another grey building.
Get in!
The guard pushed her through a door into a room she thought at first was empty.
Good. They found you.
She didn't have to look to know it was Zurin.
No greeting for me.
Never mind. Thankfully, it's your silence I need, not your less than sparkling conversation. He was sitting behind a desk covered with papers. His uniform was as immaculate as always, each silver flash and button shining. Lisa stared at him open-mouthed, wondering what possible need he still had of a dressmaker.
Lists!
He waved a hand across the piles.
Ridiculous amounts of lists that heaven forbid we don't muddle. All to be checked, the correct orders attached. No matter how close to the end we get, the machinery must keep on turning.
Lisa couldn't tell if he was exasperated or amused by the task. She had no clue how it could possibly involve her.
I've lost most of my men to the front, and my women to leading the evacuation marches, but there's still no let-up in the work to be done. This needs someone with a careful eye, and nimble fingers, and the brains not to discuss it.
In other words, you. He pointed to a table and a stool in the corner.
Sit there, sleep there. If there is any food left, someone might bring it. You will not leave this building. Something else you might want to thank me for one day, eh? If anyone ever asks.
Not such a bad boss, when all's said and done.
Lisa stared at him, wondering if he was hoping for a favor or some kind of reference. The situation was so absurd she laughed. She couldn't help herself. It was admittedly a strangled gasp. She was so long out of practice. But it was still unmistakably mirth. Zurin rose. She saw the pistol at his hip and wondered if this was finally the moment. He gazed at her. He gazed at the papers filling his desk. He sat down.
What are you waiting for?
Get started!
She lost track of time. The piles of paper for matching never seemed to grow smaller. She lost any desire to laugh when she saw what they were. More days than not, no food came. There was a bathroom Zurin never went in, but offered to her as if it was some kind of palace. Unlike the office, whose brass fittings and woven carpet Zurin insisted Lisa kept polished and swept, the fittings in the bathroom were rusted and stained, and the thin trickle of water the taps spat out was undrinkably brown. There was no mattress for her to sleep on, no blanket to keep out the cold, the thin windows let in. Zurin arrived each morning not long after dawn. When he left, he locked the airless room behind him. After the first day, Lisa stopped looking at the typed sheets of barrack numbers and prisoner numbers and places she had never heard of. She knew what they were. She knew she couldn't stop what was happening. She hoped that the white buses had come and the orders she filled for removals weren't for the green ones. She had no hope that was true. She stopped thinking beyond, one more thing to do and then I will have my ending. She could barely see through the grease-smeared windows. At night, she blocked her ears against the cries and the screams, the emptiness that flooded in after the gunfire stopped rattling. She conjured up the lake instead. Imagined she could hear the water lapping. Songs and stories. A little sleep. The old pattern. Days and nights spent in silence, her mind far away from the room, frozen in this strange world that was none of her choosing, that went on without ending. And then, one morning, Zurin didn't come. Lisa sat at her table and waited. The camp was quiet. There were no engines grumbling. There was no shouting. The sun rose high enough to light the room almost to its corners, and still the day outside behaved as if it was the dead of night. Lisa got up slowly, ears straining for guns or shouting. There was nothing. Perhaps they had run. Perhaps this was her chance, in this moment between one side going and one side coming. She pushed the door and pushed again, and would have wept at her weakness if she had had the luxury of time. Days existing on water and scant mouthfuls of bread had left her arms flimsy. She needed to dig the lock away from the wood. She scoured the room for anything that would make a tool and could only find a fork buried at the back of Zurin's desk. The task seemed ludicrous, a labor better suited to mythical heroes, but the wood was soft and worm-ridden and crumbled like stale cake as she gouged it. The camp she stepped onto when the door finally splintered gave a new meaning to wasteland. She had thought Ravensbrook was brutal when they had shoved her back into it. She had had no idea. It was as if she had wandered into hell while its demons were sated and napping after an orgy of violence. She felt the stillness like a pause. It was filled with tension, time suspended while the next madness took shape. There were no soldiers visible, or snapping dogs. The bonfires had burned down to drifts of ash. The stinking smoke from the rear of the camp was faint enough to be a memory. The horror in this new underworld didn't shout and stamp. It wriggled. Out of the heaped bodies, Lisa thought at first glance were kindling piles, out of the rags that uncurled and crawled as she groped her way past them. Don't look. Head for the gate. Head for the lake and Lottie. Lisa managed barely half a block's length before the whimpers and the corpses and the air's rotting sweetness swamped her. Her knees gave out and she fell on all fours, retching until she was formed of nothing but empty spaces and bile. She lay curled and spent against a barracks wall, whatever it was she was trying to do, forgotten, not knowing if she was the last person left in the camp still breathing beyond her last gasps, too afraid to go looking.
What the hell are you doing?
Vibrations she had not had the strength to notice shook the ground, rolling her legs and into her spine until her teeth were jumping.
That noise you're so brilliantly ignoring is the Russian tanks. They're almost at the gates.
An arm caught her round the waist, lifted her off her feet.
That means soldiers, Russian soldiers. Don't you know what they'll do if they catch you?
The arm dragged her along. The voice ran on, not waiting for an answer.
We were out there. When the Germans finally ran, we escaped. What we found in the forests was as bad as in here and drove us back in again. There's women left for dead, so used up by those brutes they've gone mad. Sick women, their own women, women who are barely women anymore. The Russians don't care as long as they can be knocked onto their backs.
The voice kicked a door open and dragged Lisa inside a block that smelled of damp and rotten earth.
You lie in there like that, still so obviously alive, drawing them onto us like flies to shit with the promise of still breathing bodies. They'll tear the place apart. We can't risk it.
Lisa never saw a face. Hands pushed her through loosened boards into a space hollowed out below the roof. More hands pulled her into a vent, so narrow it doubled her over.
Stay still. Stay quiet. Pray the Russians pass through here quickly. Rumor has it the Americans are the next army behind them. Pray for that. They're too fearful of God to treat us like animals.
It took 3 days for the Russians to sweep out and the Americans to sweep in. Lisa and the other women crawled out of the kitchen roof when they heard the accents change over, most of them so weak they couldn't stand. She was bundled into a bed, carried there by horror-stricken boys, too young for what they had seen, and put into the care of Red Cross nurses, grown too used to it.
I need to go to the lake. Of course you do. Who wouldn't want to see something pretty after this?
Smiles and pats, and no one listening.
I can't leave here. Don't make me.
Sedatives and pressing hands, and still no one listening. Then an older man came, with stars on his collar and tired eyes, who waited while she begged to stay. He regarded her so seriously Lisa thought he understood, until he shook his head like the rest of them. This happens. It will pass. You've been a prisoner so long you've grown used to it. You've learned how to survive this, and you don't trust the world outside not to be as bad as it was when you came in. You don't need to worry. Hitler is dead. The Nazis are finished. It's safe to go back to your life. Besides, there is disease here and no sanitation. You're in more danger if you stay. We have trains running back to Berlin. We are shipping everyone out. Maybe you'll be lucky, and there'll be family waiting.
You don't understand. My family is here.
She grabbed his arm, but he shook her off. Be brave. There was nothing to be done. She was well enough to work, well enough to leave. Being weak and afraid didn't count. Everyone was weak and afraid. Lisa was taken to a train that same afternoon and deposited in a carriage packed with women who couldn't stop smiling. Women who were going towards the hope of what they loved, while she was dragged from all that mattered. She couldn't do it. She wouldn't do it. She wouldn't re-enter some life that wasn't a life. When the train pulled to a stop, she hung back and let the platform empty out. When she finally got off, she stayed in the shadows until the engine regathered its strength to set out again. She was ready. She chose a place to stand which would catch the moment when the train hit the right speed. She closed her eyes and conjured up Lottie, opened her arms and felt her child tugging. Were there, miss? The shout pulled her back, turned her round. A man was bounding towards her, a soldier in a brown uniform, bellowing as if he was calling after a shying horse. Another step and you'll tumble. You don't want that now. He spoke German, but his accent was clipped and unfamiliar. His hand was on her shoulder. Lisa wriggled, but it was too late. The train was already past her, steaming away.
What are you doing? What business is this of yours?
She meant to shout and hit and kick and run down the platform until she caught up with the engine, but he had her arm too firmly held, and his eyes were so gentle. She couldn't bring herself to lash out. It would be a terrible thing for the driver, what you were trying. Never mind for you.
I don't care about the driver.
But her body had sagged, and they both knew that was a lie.
I have to do this. You stopping me now won't change my mind. It will just change the timing.
The words came out in a snarl. He didn't step back.
I'm sorry you feel like that. I really am. I imagine a lot of people feel as bad as you, which doesn't make your pain any less. But there's been a lot of dying already, don't you think? Could we wait a little longer for yours?
The kindness that filled his eyes and voice was too soft for Lisa to fight against.
I don't deserve this. I deserve that.
She pointed to the tracks and pulled away so fast her head spun and her knees buckled. He caught her as she slipped.
Maybe you don't. Maybe you do. I'm not the judge here. But I could be a friend. Could we agree on that much?
I don't need another man in uniform who won't listen to what I need. Who won't mind his own damn business.
But her head was whirling, and so was the platform. And she couldn't find the words she needed to push him away. Chapter 14. Karen. Berlin, May 1990. Michael welcomed Karen back into his home as politely as he had done the day before. He made no mention of their previous conversation, so neither did Karen. He poured the coffee that was already waiting, he cut a cake that was clearly freshly baked, and he talked without offering her any pauses.
Lisa told me her story because I pushed her to do it. Her narrative was emotionless and full of gaps, as if it had happened to someone else. I can see in your face you had hoped for more, Fraulein Cartwright. So, I promise you, did I. What I have given you is all I have. Her pain was too raw. Whatever trust she had left in the world was gone. She wanted to be left alone. It was me who wanted her to stay, who needed her.
Marcus had continued to translate for his father as he had done before, watching Karen while he did so. He was waiting, Karen knew, for her to do what Michael apparently hadn't been able to do with her mother and push back. Michael had given her so little, she barely knew where to start. He had handed her a pencil sketch with no colours, all outlines and nothing filled in. Lisa's sewing skills had taken her out of Ravensbrück, the Nazis' retreat in the face of the Russian army, had put her back in. She had returned to Berlin alone, weakened and ill. Andrew had found her at the train station, where he was acting as some kind of army liaison point for refugees and returners. He had taken her to a hospital, and Michael had tracked them down there. 2 years after that, she and Andrew had married. That was the entirety of what Michael had said, but he knew more. Karen could see it. He was wary, prepared for a challenge, prepared to defend himself. Marcus was right. His father was clever. Well, so was she. He was ready for questions about the end of the war. That didn't mean they were the ones she should ask. What was she like before all this, when she was young? Were you close then? His smile came from nowhere, and there he was, the young man in the photograph. It was all Karen could do not to gasp.
Close doesn't seem a big enough word. We had a bond, stronger than siblings. Your mother and I grew up together. Our fathers were old friends and worked like brothers together in the salon. They had the same plan for us. Lisa would have Paul's role as head designer. I would take my father's position on the technical side. And then The Nazis put paid to that. The salon suffered. Our families suffered. And so did the relationship between Lisa and I. But whether we were in step or couldn't see one thing the same, the Lisa I knew was never less than determined. She ran House Elfman almost single-handedly before she was 18. She was fiercely protective of Lottie and so determined to be a good mother. The kind she never had. Her relationship with her parents was a distant, unhappy thing. Lisa was adamant her child would have better. He fell silent. Karen wanted to cry and didn't know who most needed her tears. The little girl who had died before Lisa could mother her the way she wanted, or the little girl Lisa had left. It was a moment before she realized Michael had picked up his story. The girl I found in that hospital in 1945 was changed. She was brittle and angry, with tight walls around her. I guessed something must have happened to Lottie, but I had no idea about the way she had died. How could I? Even with the horrors we were starting to hear about, how could I have imagined something so brutal happening to a little girl? He stopped, blinked rapidly, shook himself, and went on. I suppose I thought Lisa was suffering from shock, like so many of the survivors were. You have to understand what a terrible time it was, those first months after the war. People were trying to piece their lives together out of bombed homes and scattered families. Everyone had somebody missing. Everyone was searching. Very few found happy endings. When Lisa got back to Berlin, she must have assumed her parents were dead or, at best, stuck somewhere a long way from Germany. Given the resistance work I was doing, she can't have expected me to have survived. I was the same. I was looking for her, but without much hope. I had a whole list of comrades I couldn't trace, and not even the right names for most of them. I didn't have much hope of anyone. And then I saw Lisa's photograph at the station, with Andrew's name and phone number scribbled underneath it. I have never believed in God, but that felt close to a miracle. Was she glad to be alive? The question popped into Karen's head and out of her mouth, and, perhaps because it was simple enough for her to put it to him directly, its asking took Michael by surprise. No, she wasn't. He stopped, tried to pick up the sentence, and stopped again, his face etched with pain. He closed his eyes and was clearly drifting away. Michael. Let him go where he needs to, Karen. Give him a moment. Marcus reached over and took her hand. I know you need answers. Let him find them in his own way. Michael looked as if he had fallen asleep, but his eyelids were fluttering and his fingers were clenched. There was a frailty about him that was suddenly frightening. Karen knew she had no choice but to wait. Did you recognize Zurin when he spoke to you? Lisa knew what Michael wanted to hear. Yes, I knew him and he knew me and he saved me because of it. That implied kindness, a recognition of the dreadful act done to her and a desire to somehow balance it. It was the simpler answer, far easier to explain than, I didn't remember him at all, and his saving me was a whim, a sop to his own monstrous ego. She couldn't begin to articulate all the twists and turns in that, so she gave Michael the yes that he wanted. She was exhausted. From Michael's questions, from his apologies, from his neediness, and from Andrew's. They both wanted so much more than she could give. Andrew, desperate for her smile. Michael,
desperate for her story, both of them craving some sign of her affection. All Lisa wanted was silence. Nothing felt real. Nothing mattered. Trying to put the horror of Lottie's killing into words had almost choked her. But Michael wouldn't stop asking about the camp or apologizing and begging her forgiveness. Lisa didn't blame him. She really didn't. She had said those exact words, "I don't blame you," and meant them. She couldn't finish the sentence. She couldn't tell him that the only person at fault was her. Because whose job was it to protect Lottie, if not her mother? She couldn't understand how Michael could still have questions. Why they broke her neck and threw her into the lake wasn't enough for him. Why he couldn't understand that everything had ended there, at the gates. It wasn't as if he could bear the truth. When she had said that, no, she wasn't grateful to Zurin for saving her, that she hated him for it, that all she had wanted to do was die, so how could she be glad he had thrust a life on her? Michael had sobbed. She hadn't had the energy to comfort him. Part of Lisa wanted to help him for the sake of what they had once been. A bigger part of her was filled up with rage that she was still living and her child was not, and that overshadowed every other emotion. She could feel the anger like a fire, simmering in her stomach, waiting for the spark that would let it spill. She knew that she could reach down and haul that fury-wrapped Lisa out. Replace this blank version sitting in the bed, holding Michael's hand. It wouldn't take much effort. That Lisa would be able to pour out the truth and watch Michael recoil and scrabble for the platitudes he would offer like sticking plasters. She could do that. Except that would only feed the fury and give it a target it didn't deserve, so she had swallowed the words down instead. She had watched him sob and wished, like she always did, that the ward sister would come and tell him that visiting hours were over, free her from having to be responsible for anyone's misery but her own. If Michael hadn't been Michael, they would have chased him away. But handsome and whole and charming men were, apparently, a rare commodity in war-broken Berlin. Since the first day he had appeared, the nurses had fluttered round him like giddy butterflies, and the rules went forgotten. So Lisa had sat in silence, his tears no use to her, and then he had looked up. And there it still was, written all over his anguished face. The love, she no longer had a heart whole enough to put it in. One telling. He had wiped his sleeve across his face at that and clutched at her hand. One telling of all that happened. And then we are done. No more questions. No more asking my forgiveness. Do you understand? He had nodded. What about Andrew? Do I repeat it to him? Or will you tell him yourself? You do it. Maybe then he'll stop trying to mend me. Andrew's visits were as exhausting as Michael's. His cheery British, "Whatever it is, we can fix it," beam. And his determination to play the rescuing knight was as unbearable as Michael's misery. He doesn't mean any harm. It's the guessing, Lisa. The trying to imagine what you went through. Tell me the facts, and I promise I, at least, won't keep pushing. The facts. Michael still thought that marshalling those could make sense of the world. His belief in that made the pain on his face too raw to be bearable. Lisa had had to look away from him, had focused on a water stain on the ceiling instead. Perhaps if she kept to his beloved facts, she could get through this. If she left everything else out, the agony that had fueled her, that had given her the energy night after night to stay alive and keep watch over the lake's flat waters, the hatred that still flooded her. For the Nazis who decreed that Lottie's life had no value. For the guard who could kill a child without looking. for the Allied soldiers who ripped her away from where Lottie was waiting and pushed her into a world that held nothing worth having. Michael loved her and wanted her to love him. She couldn't give him that. She was too hollow. He wanted to take her pain. She couldn't give him that either. It was all that was keeping her breathing. But if she swallowed everything she now was down into the silence that filled her, maybe she could give him what he needed to walk away. Lisa pushed herself up against the pillows and gently pushed Michael's hand away. Slowly and deliberately, and without looking at him, she began to lay the facts out. The minutes ticked past. Michael stayed silent. The waiting stretched at Karen's nerves, but she didn't want to do anything that might stop him finding a way back from whatever memories had caught him. She glanced over at Marcus, who smiled a tight smile and nodded. Small gestures, but they lifted her spirits. When Michael finally began speaking again, she had to bite back a thank God.
None of us were the same people when the war ended. We had all seen too much, lost too much, and the end of the war wasn't some great healing. It was a mess. Chaos had swallowed Berlin.
Andrew stopped your mother disappearing into it. He used his army connections and got her into the Bethel Hospital, rather than being allocated to a displaced persons camp. He told them he was afraid she had TB. She was exhausted and malnourished and had come from a concentration camp, so that seemed believable. He was so protective of her even then. He guarded her bed like a watchdog. But he was pleased when I first turned up, I'm sure of that. Lisa had retreated into silence, and he was desperate for someone who could fill in the gaps, jolt her into talking. It was hard when I saw her. She was so tiny against the bed frame, her hair chopped short, her eyes too big for her face. She had turned young and old, and it broke my heart.
She must have been pleased to see you. Karen regretted the question the moment she asked it. Michael's voice slipped from the measured tone he was still somehow managing into a jagged stop and start.
No, I don't think I could claim that. She stopped being silent, that's true. She was shocked at first, and then so furious I thought she would scratch my eyes out. But then it stopped. It all stopped.
He paused, his hands fidgeting as if they were fighting the memories.
There wasn't a feeling left in her for me. That's when I knew something terrible had happened. You have to understand that I had seen people reconnect. I'd brought some of them together. I had seen tears and joy, and also plenty of hurt and anger when one person's war seemed easier lived than another's. I could have dealt with any of those. But after that first furious reaction, there was nothing. She said the right things. That she forgave me. That she didn't blame me. It was like listening to a machine.
He broke off, Marcus following a beat behind, and looked directly at Karen.
I loved her. I truly loved her. At one point during the war, I was sure she loved me. But then, she didn't feel anything for me at all. Not even the hatred I felt I deserved. I didn't matter to her anymore.
Another piece of the puzzle uncovered. Except Karen didn't know what to do with it. Michael and her mother had been in love. She had guessed his feelings from the wedding photograph. She had never considered the love she saw there was returned.
I'm sorry.
The words sounded too easy, inadequate. Karen forced herself to do better.
I can't imagine how hard that must have been for you. But you must have understood when she told you about Lottie. And she didn't blame you. So you must have hoped things between you would heal over time. Especially when you saw her with my father. She must have been different, more alive with him.
Marcus had been right about the Michael who had greeted her earlier that night. That Michael had taken control of the conversation, delivering what little he said calmly and methodically. Even when her questions had surprised him and pricked at old hurts, his answers had remained considered. Now he stumbled over his words and wouldn't meet her eye.
She didn't stop loving me because she had fallen for him, if that's what you think. She was as closed off with Andrew as she was with me. No, that's not quite true. There were feelings there, although they weren't what he wanted. Your father was kind, a true gentleman. Lisa saw that. When he sat with her quietly or read to her, she would smile and grow calmer than I could make her. But so often she was angry with him. There were moments when she bristled with it. She tried to hide it, and I doubt Andrew noticed the way that I did. He cared about her and wanted her to like him. I'm not sure how experienced Andrew was with women, but he'd clearly developed a crush on your mother that didn't have any space in it for flaws. But Lisa, she didn't have romantic feelings for him any more than she did for me. I don't think she could.
He poured that out so quickly, Karen had to ask Marcus to repeat his translation to make sure she had properly understood.
I don't follow. Father was kind, and he had helped her. So what reason would she have to be angry with him?
Michael's fingers locked. Karen could feel him pulling away.
You are asking about things that were never discussed.
But you must have had a theory. You must have wondered. Could he have been different when you weren't there? Pushed her too far about her past and Lottie, maybe? Did he ever give you any reason to dislike him?
No. Not at all. Your father was a very good man. I never believed him capable of treating her or anyone badly. Even later, with the lengths he was forced to go to.
Michael rubbed his face and shook off whatever it was he was going to say.
Neither of us knew how deep her misery ran. How broken she was. By the time we realized, it was too late. Or perhaps Andrew guessed and he kept it to himself. Thought he could fix things.
Phrases slid in and out of Karen's head. So protective even then. The lengths he was forced to go to. How broken she was. By the time we realized it was too late, they felt like clues, but she had no idea what to go hunting for.
Marcus had stopped watching her and was watching his increasingly uncomfortable father. Karen could feel her moment slipping away. Marcus looked on the verge of stopping his translation. She had to trust that her German would hold.
What was Lisa like when father found her at the station?
Michael shook his head.
He never said. Not really. Except that she was weak and wobbling on the platform and didn't seem to know what she was doing.
Then his hands knotted and unknotted. Karen's stomach started to follow.
If I am honest, I didn't believe him. I think she had been trying to throw herself under a train and Andrew chose not to tell me. He wouldn't have wanted to discuss that. If it had happened, he wasn't a man much given to dwelling on emotions outside his control.
The description of her father was so accurate, Karen couldn't argue with it. The description of her mother about to throw herself under a train was one she wished she had never had to hear.
Is that a guess?
That she was suicidal?
Because of Lottie? Or did you know?
Michael sighed and his words slowed.
No is a strong word.
How can anyone ever truly know something so intimate?
but the deliberately absent way she behaved in the